Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission. Welcome back, friends. I am really excited about today's episode. I have a good friend joining me today that I've been wanting to have on our podcast for several months now. Welcome, Lori McDaniels. So happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to introduce you to our listeners. Mike and Lori live in Arkansas. They are fellow Midwesterners like us. And Lori has a large variety of ministry background as a pastor's wife, as a Bible teacher, author, a missionary experience, and now she and Mike have started a company, a ministry to provide soul care for missionaries and people in ministry. So I would love for you to just share more about your background so our listeners can know you a bit more.
You're right. Like, my ministry experience has been very diverse and variable over the last 35 years of ministry. But what Mike and I have just stepped into is something that the way that we have like said it to other people is like, look, you know, most of our ministry life has been about the Great Commandment. And I won't say that all of my ministry life has been about the Great Commission. God kind of had to wreck my heart a little bit to see that the Great Commission wasn't just a good thing, but it was my thing. Like, it was something that he has actually given to every, you know, believer. So that was a journey in and of itself. But those are two things that really have defined our ministry. But in the past few years, God began doing a shift where we began to see that there's this great invitation, not just the Great Commandment, the Great Commission, but there's this invitation that Jesus gives to us, this sustainable rhythm of walking with him, where he says, come, all who are weary, heavy burden, heavy laden, I will give you rest. Take off that hard press, sometimes self-imposed yoke that we function with, and like learn from him. Like, we go back into the work, right? But it's from a different sustainable rhythm as we have learned how to work and walk and live like Jesus did. And so that really has become a fresh focus for us as we integrate it with the Great Commandment and the Great Commission.
Mm-hmm. So what's the name of your new ministry?
Shocker. It's called The Great Invitation. The Great Invitation. Yeah. And it really is a soul care ministry, which I know sometimes it stumps people. Like, what does that, you know, mean? And our approach to it is really, we believe soul care isn't something that should just be punitive. Like, I entered into this crisis and therefore I've got to go and, you know, get some kind of help or something like that. We believe that the way that God has created this and designed us, that soul care can be responsive, because there are hard life crisis situation, marriage struggle, personal identity crisis, many things that can enter into our life where we need a responsive kind of soul care, transitions, grief, loss, so forth. But there's also a proactive part to it as well, that when we are proactively allowing God, through the guidance and wisdom of others, through his word and his scripture, his Holy Spirit, to tend to places in our soul and kind of sometimes pull back the layer, double click on different areas of our life, that we find a level of health and wholeness that we didn't know we were missing. Mm-hmm. And so I think it can be responsive, and I think it can be proactive. And when we look at it that way, it really becomes normative. Soul care does. It becomes transformative. Like, it's not just this punitive kind of thing that, oh, I've got to do this because I entered into some crisis in my life.
What's the website?
The website is greatinvitation.org.
Okay. So I truly do want our listeners to know about it, because we need soul care. We need it. I have so many issues and I have benefited. I benefited from the acute responsive soul care of I'm in a crisis, and the proactive, I want to get healthier. I want more intimacy in my marriage. I want freedom from shame. I mean, all kinds of things. So Lori and Mike are very gifted in meeting people in a very real way. And you and I just go deep really fast. And that's something I love about our friendship. And that's what we're going to do today as we're recording this. So we're talking about, we all have stories. We all have hard parts of our stories. Mm. And we often talk about suffering as Christians. We know God uses our suffering for our good, to make us more like Christ, for God's glory. Also, God uses the hard parts of our story to proclaim his goodness, to proclaim the ways he has delivered us, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's no deliverance, there's no rescue without a hard thing. It has to be pretty bad if you need deliverance and rescue and healing. So I wanted to hear you on this topic on how does God do that? What is so special about the willingness to share the hard parts of our story as an opportunity to share about God's goodness and power?
I think that's something that we probably need to sit with longer, maybe in our personal lives, because what happens is we often dismiss the hard parts that we walk through. It's like, we got to clean up our act. We've got to polish it up a little bit, and then we'll go back into ministry, or we declare some kind of different story that doesn't really align or match up with where we currently are in our hearts. And the thing is like, yes, God, we go through hard things and God uses them to conform us to his image, for Christ to be formed in us, right? We go through hard things that God takes us through, and we come into a deeper communion with him, where the scaffolding has been knocked out from underneath us and how we used to communicate or relate to God. Some of the spiritual practices don't even seem to work anymore. And so we're scrambling, right? But God uses it to deepen an intimate relationship with him. But I truly believe, and the more that I just forage through scripture, that I see so often, I think something that I've missed in my life, that it is those hard parts that, yes, he conforms, yes, deeper, you know, communion with him, but also to declare him. And as the more I'm in scripture, not that I haven't been, but it's almost just like God is pulling back layers, helping me to see that so often throughout scripture, that it is those difficult places that become doorways, really, to declare him, almost invitations that make the gospel relatable, accessible, deliverable, tangible to other people who are experiencing real life hard struggles. Mm-hmm. You and I have talked about the passage in Psalm 40, where like we could all relate to that pit, right? Like we know that pit. And we want out of the pit. And sometimes we attempt to claw ourselves out of the pit and wish somebody would come along and take us out of the pit. But the thing is, when you read that passage, it says, I waited patiently for him and I cried out to him. And that is the only thing that the psalmist does in that situation. He cries out and he waits. But then it goes on and it says that he drew me out of the pit. He set my feet upon a rock. He made my steps secure. And I think the part that we miss, because we're so glad to be out of the pit, is that it also says, and he put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God, so that many would fear and see and put their trust in him. He even goes on a few verses later to say, I have not hidden your deliverance in my heart. And so what often we think, and I think how we function, I have functioned, honestly, much of my ministry life, mission life, Christian life has been just get me out of the pit and then I will go on, and I keep the pit silent, almost hidden. But when I do that, I also keep silent and hide a deliverance of God, maybe a character of God, a way that he has acted and worked in my life that ought to be shared, not just polished up and pretty packaged kind of situation. Yeah.
Why do you think we hide the pit? Mm-hmm. Why are we not sharing it with others?
Well, first of all, I think it goes back to something you kind of said, you know, earlier, like we all need soul care, right? But let's just be honest. Not many of us would say that out loud. It almost feels vulnerable. It feels risky. And I think that there is some kind of, I'll just call it a lie, that we have come to believe and we act in, that if I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, then I ought to be better than this. Yeah. Or I should be out of this situation by now. Or if I tell other people that my marriage is struggling, or here's a good example, Tammy. Because I meet one-on-one with people, with missionaries, all the time online. We meet face-to-face too, doing different intensives and so forth, but online regularly. And a missionary friend of mine that I was meeting with just recently said, Lori, I was fasting and I was praying and God began to reveal some things in my life and in my soul, in my heart. Like I literally fell apart and I'm not coming out of it yet. Like there are places where I'm needing healing. There are wounds that I didn't even know that were there. But then she said these words, but my fear is, what if people knew that I was going through this struggle? Like, would my church that sent me be embarrassed to know that I was falling apart? Would the people who have invested in me to be over here wonder, wait, I thought you were over there supposed to be sharing the gospel? You know, and so even her own fear, her own framework of I ought to be better than this, for crying out loud, I'm a missionary, or I'm, you know, delivering the gospel, therefore I can't have a struggle if I'm a follower of Jesus Christ.
Those are such real fears and such real lies that I could get sent home. What if my struggle's so big that my org doesn't think I should be on the field, or they think I need to go back to the States? Mm-hmm. It's so real. People don't want to share those things with their own organization sometimes. They want to share it outside because of that fear. And because of that pressure that a missionary shouldn't be struggling to that extent. Or I've definitely believed the lie, I should be over this by now. I should be, I shouldn't struggle with this thing, fill in the blank, it's been many over the years, for this long. Maybe it would have been okay for a few months, but not for this long.
And I think it even becomes a little bit more even maybe on the ground, maybe it's something that we don't even feel like we have to share with our mission organization, but we don't want to share it with a coworker, a co-laborer, because of what it might do if they thought that our marriage was struggling, if they thought that I was going through depression, if they knew that I was struggling with anxiety, if they knew that there's this wound that keeps creeping up from my past. And so we don't even want to at times admit it to even those who are the closest iron sharpening people around us for fear of what they might think. And yet at times when we take that risk to be, you know, more vulnerable with others, it is almost kind of an exhale on the other side. We find that someone is like, wait, you've struggled with depression, or you're struggling in your marriage and communication, or whatever it might be. Here's the thing about it though, is our story and what we're going through ultimately doesn't point to us. Like ultimately our story does or will point to what God is doing in us. It will ultimately tell of Him. And so, you know, consider or maybe ask yourself questions, you know, about your own story. What is God doing in me in this story right now?
I think it's strange that we do tend to hide our struggles and we just want to be competent. We want to be strong people. And yet, as I've been reading the Psalms lately, I've been noticing how often the psalmists talk about God as their refuge, as his hiding place, needing rescued. Please help me. Please rescue me. So many of the Psalms assume hard things in life, assume neediness. We would never need God to be a refuge unless life were really hard, unless you really want to get away from life, right? Like you want to hide, you're trying to get a hiding place. And so then I think to myself, why do I hesitate to share that my life is really hard? Is it because I don't think my things are hard enough to warrant needing a refuge? That should be just for people who are going through this other level of struggles. But the Psalms do help me, they remind me of that freedom, that I am poor and needy. It's okay. There's nothing to be ashamed of in that. And I do think that when we share the hard things, the pit, the thing we needed healed from, the wound, that it does connect with people in a very special and powerful way.
Yeah,
even
much.
If we don't share all the details, even it could be someone you just met, but being able to say, there was a time in my life when I struggled with shame, but then when I experienced the unconditional love of Jesus Christ, it really helped set me free from that. It helped me see myself as God sees me. For example, that's one of the big things I've experienced.
Yeah, I love it that you mentioned the Psalms, because one thing that you notice, let me back up. One thing I think that we do is we quote things from the Psalms, like, God is your refuge. God is a very present help in a time of trouble. You know, God shelters you. There's no place that you can flee from his spirit. You know, if I go to heaven, if I'm in the pit, like, he's there, right? And so we say things, they roll off of our tongue because we know them. But in some sense, we come to a point in our life when God takes us through some incredible, hard things, hard places. Sometimes we are afraid to even call it suffering. But like when you look at Job and he's using brutal, harsh language with God as he's crying out, right? He does say things, you know, yeah, I know my Redeemer lives. But I love when we get to the end of Job and he says these words, like, I have heard of you, but now I see you. Like, in other words, what he's saying is like, look, I've heard that you're a refuge. I've heard that you're a present help in time of trouble. I've heard these things about you. Like, I know them intellectually, but now I have experienced it on my own.
Yeah.
And so when you read the Psalms and you see what is written in the Psalms, like, it's very transparent, it's very authentic, it's very vulnerable. But even though the psalmist may be describing their story, their plight, their heart, whatever it might be going, they may be going through, they're never really the hero of the story. So one of my favorite psalms that I honestly, Shani, I return to over and over and over again. I've been in it probably for the last 3 years, still just gleaning from it, is Psalm 107. There's a verse at the very beginning of that chapter that I used to sing at, like, in church as a kid or at kids camp, which in the ESV and the King James Version, it says, let the redeemed of the Lord say so, right? But right before that, it says something about God's loving kindness and so forth. And so let them say so. But as a kid, it was just a song that we sang, you know, let the redeemed of the Lord say so. And then we would all shout, so, but I had no clue what it meant. Until several years ago, and I was reading it in different translations, and I read it in the NIV, and it says, let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story. And then when you look at that psalm, it goes on, and there's four different stories that are within this psalm. The first one is the story, it just said, some wandered in a desert. Like, they were unsettled, they didn't have a place for home, they were hungry, they were thirsty, they were, you know, unsatisfied, and so forth. That is part of their human experience. That is part of their story. But then their response is they cry out to God. And his response is he delivers them. And the end of that story becomes, let them give thanks to God, you know, his love endures forever. And I think I'm misquoting it. You know how you get it memorized you go to say it and you're like,
no, you're getting it really well. Keep going.
Well, but there's a second story then. And these people aren't wanderers in a desert. These people are like prisoners in affliction, really of their own doing. They're in darkness. They're in the shadow of death. They're alone. They're desolate. They're bound. They're afflicted. But it says because they rebelled against God. They really went against his counsel. But then it tells us how their experience is, that they bowed their heads down. They were in hard labor. There was no one to help. So that's their human experience, different than the first story. But their response is that they cry out to God. And his response is that he delivers them. And then the end story is the same as the first one, that they give thanks to the Lord for his steadfast love and his wondrous works among men, right? But then there's a third story. Like, it almost sounds like we have this hymn and we're going to sing all stanzas of this hymn. Mm-hmm. But I love it. You can't miss a stanza because every story tells a different version of a hardship in a human experience. The third one, they were basically fools in their sinful ways. And so they brought it on themselves. Like, they loathed food. They were sick. They felt like they were near the gates of death. But their response is they cry out to God, and his response is he delivers them. And the story is they give thanks to God for his steadfast love and his wonderful deeds among men. Maybe the fourth one is my favorite. Because I think the way that I see it, like the second and third story is like, well, of course they went through hardship. Like, they were fools. They rebelled against God. But the way that I see the fourth story is it wasn't consequences of their actions or choice or consequences of even somebody else's sin in their life. It was like life happened. Like, we don't live in the Garden of Eden anymore. And so There are these people, they go out on ships and they're just doing their life. And matter of fact, they even says they saw the wonderful things that God had done, you know, out on the sea. But then it says this, that God raised up a storm. And he brought up the waves of the sea, and they were tossed up to the heavens. They plummeted down to the earth, and they were staggering around. And there's a phrase in there that we have used. It says they were at their wits' end. Like, I can't handle it anymore.
Yes.
But even in their experiences, this, what they do, how they respond, is the same as the first three stories. They cry out to God in their trouble and their distress. And his response is the same, that he delivers them from their distress. And the end of the story is the same. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his steadfast love and his wonderful deeds among men. And so, like, I'm not intending to, like, just go through and exegete this passage, but I do want us to see that, like, we can't remove humanity from Christianity. Like, the human experience encompasses so much. Whether it's of our own doing and consequences, or it's of things that just happen again, because we don't live in the Garden of Eden anymore. But we have a choice to cry out to God in our hardship. And the story that we're hearing often through the Psalms is of his deliverance, right? But they're not the hero of the story. They're telling us their story. We're getting to relate to their human experience. I can relate to when someone is at their wits' end. But that is not the hero of the story. That's not the end of the story. The story illumines God's deliverance, and it's relatable. It's accessible. Yeah. Like, I see the gospel right here in this song in and of itself.
That's really good. I was thinking about what would motivate me, what does motivate me sometimes to share the hard things in my past, because you could say, well, I'm a new creation. The old is past. Why talk about those things anymore? However, God has used most of the hard things in our lives to really shape us, and he does redeem them, right? He turns them around. So we start to see them as we've gone through healing. We start to see them through different eyes. When you said that quote from Job, I had heard about you, but now I've seen you with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. I think that is the prize of the pit. Mm-hmm. We can experience an intimacy with God like we never would when we're not at our wit's end, when we're not just completely broken. And it's still terrible. It's still a pit. But there is that very, very special nearness. God is near to the brokenhearted that he offers to us and promises us. And so I think that is one of the biggest motivators. That's what gives people, for instance, you know, they're in the hospital with cancer, but they're somehow sharing with the nurses, right? Because I do think there's this, wow, I'm experiencing God in this very special way right now. And it makes me want to talk about him, makes me want to say, no, he is still good. He is faithful. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, though, I know for me, it's much easier to share my stories after the fact, when it's all behind me and I've experienced healing at least significant healing. You know, we're always a work in progress. But last week we did a missionary task training and we were studying Acts again, as we do. And something that really struck me was Acts 8:3, when the believers were scattered due to the persecution and they continued preaching the word. Mm-hmm. And I have recently gone through a transition. You know, we had to leave India, we've moved to Spain, and I have noticed that when I'm under stress, many times, sadly, Lori, I feel like I don't even have eyes to see lost people. I'm kind of consumed with my own needs and transition. And yet these believers somehow had capacity. They were going through some traumatic things. They had been scattered, but they continued preaching the word. So how do we have the resilience to keep sharing when we don't know quite yet how the story is going to end?
Gosh, I think there's a couple of ways that we can go about this. Because you said at the beginning, you know, sometimes we feel like we shouldn't share a story until it's done, right? Or you don't even have clarity when you're in the middle of it. And so I think what you're identifying there, and then I want to kind of, I feel like there's two parts to kind of tackle here. The first part, I just want to approach it as like looking at our stories. I think at times we need to ask the question, like, is this story ready to serve others? Like, is there something that I can use my story in a way that points to God, or does it still need tending to in my own soul? And I think in that, like, we can assess. There are times that I think there's maybe three different categories there. There are those open wounds. Like, when I'm in ICU bleeding out, I can't get off the bed to go out and help the next person, you know, next to me who is also in ICU and bleeding out. I do not have the capacity. I do not have the capability, the wounds, the pain, the struggle, like the pain is still active and it is still incredibly raw. Those emotions are still close to the surface and clarity is limited. I think those are the places that those stories belong in trusted spaces. Those stories belong with a trusted close friend. Those stories belong with a mentor, a counselor, a spiritual director, but they don't belong just held secretly. Okay. Healing does happen with God, but it also often happens in connection with others who are walking that same spiritual journey who can help us process. And we're not like facing the pressures of teaching from our story.
Right.
Now, I think I'm going to pause there as we're talking about those open wounds, because, you know, you're referring to the passage in Acts, like they were still sharing. But like, I can also think of Elijah, like, wow, he had just gone through this incredible God moment, but he ends up in this place where honestly, he just wants to die. Like he can't handle it anymore. He's not in a space to step in and continue to do ministry. And I see in that passage that God, without saying it in these words, like gives him permission, like he tends to his soul. He brings him food. He brings him drink. He tells him to rest. And for 40 days, Elijah's just walking with God. He's not going out and prophesying anymore. He's not going out and doing ministry. There is a time that I don't think we have to force.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
There is,
and being able to recognize those signs and slow down, I think, is really wise.
Yeah. So I think there are open wounds, and I think there's a place where we don't need to fake resiliency.
Yeah.
That we need to be
That's good.
Real with ourselves and real with God, with what we're actually holding and carrying, which sometimes we aren't honest with God. We almost shame ourselves where I shouldn't feel this way or be this way. When God's like trying to go, hey, no, I actually really want you to come to me with this place in your life right now and experience me in a different way. But a second category of wounds, I think, are those wounds that are healing wounds. They're not healed wounds. That would be the third category. But there are those places that are healing wounds where the pain is still real, but God has begun to meet you in it in a way that is giving you a new perspective of him that you haven't experienced before. The story isn't finished. It's not neat and tidy. There's not some clean resolution, But there are places that you're able to say, here's what I'm learning. Here's where I'm experiencing God's presence, where he is near to the brokenhearted that I have never experienced him before.
Uh-huh.
Like I can remember one time sitting on the front porch with a friend who was telling me her own kind of story and testimony. And she was quoting Isaiah or Jesus. He's quoting Jesus, quoting Isaiah. I'm not sure what she was going after, but she was basically saying, look, I really feel like God has called me to be, you know, that kind of person who is delivering good news to the poor, who's binding up the brokenhearted, who is bringing healing, you know, and so on and so forth to the captive. And I remember whenever she said the word brokenhearted, I literally said, yeah, well, I don't want to be one of those people. And she looked at me kind of like with eyes, like, you know, without saying it, like, well, you are one of those people. But I hadn't realized it myself. But when I did come to a place where God took me through a time in my life that was completely unexpected, completely unwanted, and at the same time, completely necessary, in that part of my story, I could say, look, my heart has been broken deeply. And yet God is meeting me in that brokenness in a way I have never experienced him before. Like, do you have a story like that in your own brokenness, you know, kind of situation?
Yeah.
My story wasn't neat. Like, even the woman at the well, I think when she goes back to the village after she's had this intimate conversation with Jesus, which I think I would always read that story as almost like he was harsh with her. But I think it was more of his kindness, the kindness of God led to repentance in her.
Yes. Yeah.
She goes back to the village. Look. Her story is not neat and tidy. She's still in the midst, I would say, of healing from wounds of her past, from, my goodness, the relationships with men and so on and so forth that she has. And yet she's able to go back to the village and say in the midst of this place, hey, come meet the man who knows everything about my story. Like, is this the Messiah?
Yeah.
And because of the story, a village comes, right?
And she was able to talk about it in a general way without sharing every detail of her past, right? And God used it.
Right.
So I really like those three categories. That's very helpful. We have open, raw wounds. We shouldn't put pressure on ourselves in those moments to, oh, no, I got to share how God's using this in my life. It might not be the time. It actually might be harmful to us even, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just to review those three categories, because I'm putting things in my life in those categories right now. The healing wounds where you're in process, you've received a lot of healing, maybe even some significant deliverance, but it's not this thing way back in your past that you can just talk about easily or flippantly. You know, it's still pretty fresh.
Yeah.
I have something like that in my life. But then I also have healed wounds, right? I mean, we lost our first baby. That was a valley. That was hard. But now when I meet someone who's lost a baby, I can talk about that and it's healed. And I'm able to really fully be helpful in those moments. So I think those are just helpful categories.
Yeah. You know, we talked about Elijah, like, because we used the Acts passage, you know, people were still sharing the gospel in the midst of the persecution. How do we know? Like, how do we continue on when we're still walking through hard things? And we use Elijah as sometimes there is a time to stop. That our soul needs to be tended to, that God needs to tend to our soul for an extended period of time. We hit a breaking point and we just need to be stop and be ministered to. I think there are also times that we need to pause, not for maybe an extended period of time, but a pause for a reset. But what we tend to do is we tend to think there are so many needs still happening, so many people, and we even compare our hard with somebody else's hard. Their hard seems harder than our hard, even though we feel like we're getting close to our breaking point, right? And when I feel that way, I do realize that there are times that I need a short pause to reset so that I can minister.
Yeah.
And when I read the passage in Mark 1:35, which we quote so often as, you know, Jesus getting away to pray, and we use it as, see, you need to have a quiet time in the morning to pray and so forth. If we lose the context of what's taking place, like, what's taking place is that all these people were kind of like, it said the whole city came to him for healing, but he ends up leaving. There are still people who need ministered to. There are still people who have needs that need to be met. And yet he's off meeting with God and praying. Like, he needed a time to reset so he could continue in ministry. And so I see that there is that long extended period of time. I see that there's sometimes that we need to be honest. We're not greater than Jesus. Like, we need to reset ourselves. The need didn't ease up, but it was necessary for him to ease up. But then I see, too, that there's sometimes that we show up in our weakness to minister to others. That whether you use the Acts passage or we can, goodness, we can quote many of Paul's passages where he says, you know, I came to you in weakness and fear and trembling so that the gospel would rely on God's power, like not my own.
Yeah.
There's even another story, I think it's in 2 Corinthians, where he talks about how they feared for even their own life. Like God had taught them something new about him that they had not experienced before. And that's why they are now there sharing with these people. And he even goes on to say, like, we're bringing a kind of comfort that we found in our affliction. And this comfort is for your comfort and your salvation. And so Paul, or we can talk about his thorn in the flesh and him learning that God's grace is sufficient, but he doesn't talk about his thorn in the flesh if it's a medal of honor or a unended kind of story. Like, he's come to the conclusion, not just a knowledge, quoting something, oh, God's grace is just sufficient as a spiritual platitude. He has experienced God's grace is sufficient, you know, and so that's why he tells his story about the thorn in the flesh.
We've been going out sharing the gospel here, and you know, I still feel very new to Spain, so I'm constantly just learning. New to Europe, we were in London last week, and twice last week when I shared with complete strangers, they got tears in their eyes because of when they were sharing hard things with me. And we hear all these statistics about people being lonely and isolated, and someone shared with us this statistic in London that 40% of the people haven't had a conversation face-to-face in the last week. I don't know if that's true. I mentioned it to some London girls I was sharing with, and they were like, oh yeah, I believe that's true. But I do think when so many non-believers, they haven't experienced God as being real in their lives, as really connecting with them in the places they need him the most. And when we just give them a glimpse of that, when we say, there was a time in my life when I really struggled with perfectionism or trying to earn my worth through my accomplishments, anxiety, they do listen. I think they wonder, wow, God can really meet me in those places. We don't have to always share all the details, you know, at least at the beginning, especially with strangers, but just being able to bring up real and hard things can open up people's hearts and their minds to consider Jesus, maybe in a way they haven't before.
Right. I mean, our lives are to be a living echo of the gospel, right? But it's not just, we don't want to present it in some kind of abstract theology to people. We want to present it in something that is very tangible and real and accessible and relatable to them. And I think you're right. Not every detail. We don't even know what Paul's thorn in the flesh was, but we know enough.
Yeah.
We know enough to then begin to see not something necessarily just that Paul experienced. Like, there is a relatableness to that. That I can, man, I can relate to that. I don't know what his thorn in the flesh is, but I sure know what my five thorns in the flesh are, right? But I can also, so I can relate to that. But he's also pointing me to God, whose grace is sufficient, which causes me to go, okay, is God's grace sufficient for me too? Like, is God's grace sufficient in this area that seems like such a struggle for me in my life? I think that we are to be living echoes of the gospel, and that should reverberate in every part of our heart. Like, at one point you said, you know, we are a new creation. you know, the old is gone and past. Here's the thing is like that in and of itself, we still live in the already and the not yet. And so, yes, I am a new creation, and yet I'm still becoming a new creation.
Yes. We're walking in newness of life.
Right.
We're believing we're new over and over every day.
Yes, all the time. And so, you know, I can become a believer at 25, you know, years old. And it doesn't mean that all the things, you know, the wounds, the beliefs, the lies, the things that I've experienced in my life just like magically like rubbing a genie bottle and go away. Now, yes, do we see that kind of miraculous healing in scripture? Absolutely. But we also see a lot of times that we're walking through where God is renewing our mind and he is transforming us and he's conforming us to his image. And that in and of itself is where you even grow in a deeper relationship with God, where we are able to present him, not just as some, you know, abstract theology, but personally. And I think that's why it says in Psalm 66:16, come and hear, come and listen, and let me tell you what God has done for my soul.
For my soul, like, yeah.
Yeah, again, our stories are incorporated, but
let
it's about
me tell you.
Him.
I want to tell you. Yes.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
I have had times in my life when I feel like I'm in the midst of healing, right? So there's a hard thing, and God is healing me, and I even experience, I think I'm experiencing some deliverance, but then I find myself really struggling with it again.
Mm.
Okay, I'm gonna read a verse from Psalm 31. Okay. This has really encouraged me that in the same psalm, I think this happens many times in the Psalms, there's both a thankfulness, a proclamation of God, you have delivered me, and then also a present tense, please help me, please deliver me. Like, wait, are you delivered or are you not? You know, you just said he has, and yet you still seem to be really struggling. In Psalm 31, there's a lot of wonderful verses there about God seeing our affliction, knowing our affliction, just how powerful that is when we know God sees us in the midst of it, even if he hasn't rescued us yet. But in verse 21, it says, blessed be the Lord, for he has wondrously shown his steadfast love to me when I was in a besieged city. Okay, so I'm being attacked in that moment, mm-hmm. in the midst of the attack, I'm experiencing God's steadfast love. And the next verse says, I had said in my alarm, I am cut off from your sight. But you heard me when I cried to you for help. There was a moment when David felt like he was cut off from God's sight. He didn't feel this wonderful, warm, fuzzy, God is delivering me. He kind of felt mm-hmm. alone, but he was still mm-hmm. crying out, but he didn't know how it was going to end. So I'm making a point and asking a question. I think we can experience deliverance and still need more deliverance. And that doesn't mean that the deliverance we experienced wasn't real. So,
I mean, again, we're going back to the already not yet. Like the deliverance was real, but so is that God continually delivers. I love that passage in Psalms that you're referring to. I think there's probably even others that we could go to in Psalms. The one that comes to my mind right now is actually in Lamentations chapter 3, where he's talking about all these things. You know, my soul is continually bowed down within me and so forth. And he's remembering his afflictions. He's remembering his wandering. But then he interrupts, you know, in chapter 3, kind of that hinge point where he says, but this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope that the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. Like, he's not saying, like, everything just came to an end and abruptly, like, God delivered, no more problems, no more pain, no more stress. I'm not struggling with that anymore. It's like, no, he's saying all of this is happening around, but this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that his mercies are new every morning. His steadfast love never ceases. His faithfulness is great. The Lord is my portion. Therefore, my soul will say, I'm going to hope in him. And so I think what you're saying is very realistic. There was a time, Shani, I mean, I'll just be honest. There was a time that I slammed into depression like a brick wall. And I questioned God, like, are you real? Like, you seem distant. Everything that I believed all of a sudden felt shaky. The scriptures that I knew, and I was going to things like Lamentations, okay, I'm calling to mind these things because I've experienced it in the past. I've experienced his deliverance in the past. I've experienced his presence in the past, even though in this moment, it doesn't feel like that way right now. And it even felt like, how do I even say this to people? Like, who do I tell? Like, I have responsibilities to teach people at my church how to study the Bible, or, you know, like, I had ministry leadership responsibilities while in the midst of slamming into a wall of deep, dark depression. Now, I can say now that God delivered me from that season. But here's the thing, is it almost feels like sometimes there's this residue that still exists. That's like, wow, I could really, like, that slope feels still very near. Mm-hmm. And yet I know that God delivered me. And you know what? He still is delivering me.
Yes. Yes.
And so I can speak of it. I can talk about it in a way that 2.5 years ago, I could not talk about it. I was in the depths of darkness. And that was for the trusted people in my life. Now I can talk about it to others who have gone through something like that and speak of God working in my life, not even just as past tense. Yes, definitely as past tense, but also in ongoing. And that's the God I want, right? That's the kind of God that we long for, that is continually working, continually showing up.
I think sometimes there's a fear. Was that real, God? Did you really? It seemed like you did something supernatural and special in my heart. It seemed like I really received some healing and deliverance, but I need proof of it every day. I need you to show me. That word residue is really comforting to me right now, that yes, God met with you in powerful ways, but you still have some scars. You know that song, I thank you for the scars. I like that song. I do have a feeling of, I thank you for the scars. I thank you because they are proof. You were so close to me. And we're going to need more and more freedom and deliverance until the day Jesus returns, period. I mean, there's no one on the earth who is fully delivered and fully free from all of this broken world and sin and problems. So there's no shame in having a story of healing and deliverance that still needs more. That's okay.
You know, here's the thing. When you're saying that, I think of Jacob. Like, you talk about somebody who is intimate with God, like he's wrestling with him, basically, right? And the story isn't about how Jacob conquered God. The story becomes about, like, God even changed Jacob's name. And God touched him in a way that now he limps for the rest of his life. Like, he has a visible expression and testimony of God's nearness to his life. What I don't want often, and I don't even think of it this way, I don't even want to say it this way, but it's real internally, is actually, I don't want the limp. Like, God, I want you to be near, and I want you to touch me, and I want to experience, I want you to rewrite my name. I want you to use me, you know, in a covenantal kind of way, but really, I don't want the limp. And yet, that was Jacob's life. That was Jacob's story. His limp actually becomes a revelation of God, a testimony, a story of God's nearness and his touch on Jacob's life.
That's good. Any last words of encouragement, maybe for someone who is, they're not at the end, maybe they still feel like they're in the pit. How would you encourage them?
Oh, man, that is such a tender question that really deserves a really tender response, which I think sometimes we want to give some kind of spiritual platitude that just bypasses the reality of someone's pain and their journey that they are in. I think my encouragement would be to, one, stay anchored in the Word, even when it might not feel like it has felt before, is to stay anchored in God's Word. Two, speak to someone that you can trust. So whether it is a trusted friend, God put us in community, not just for the good times, but also for the hard times. And so, like, trust someone that you can be in community with, or even if it, my goodness, reach out to me or my husband, a trusted source that you can be real and authentic without fear of judgment. That's a safe space that can, but also can, I would say this, that can walk with you spiritually through it, not bypassing. Like, God is still actively at work. He is not separate from our pain and hurt. He desires to be integrated into that place. I think third is, I would say, like, be honest with yourself about what you're carrying. Sometimes we wish it away. We don't want it to exist. We even, you know, shame ourselves. That if I was just better, or I believe in Jesus, why can't I get past this? Or why do I feel this way? Be honest with yourself so that you can also be honest with God. Literally having a conversation, not sugarcoating it, not whitewashing it. Take Job, for example. You know, he said, look, I'm bitter in soul and I'm not going to be silent about it. And he comes to God with it. Mm-hmm. I think those would be my encouragement. It's hard mm-hmm. at times.
Yep.
And yep. But hard doesn't mean it can't be holy. Like, it still can be a mm-hmm. holy place where we commune with God and others.
And getting honest with ourselves, for me, requires extra time. It requires mm-hmm. me to not run away and escape through busyness and work. Mm-hmm. And that would be my default, is just mm-hmm. stay busy and push all that away, unless I really get forced and broken.
Mm-hmm.
So an encouragement that you might need to carve out some extra time just to get honest mm-hmm. with yourself. And I think the sharing it with a trusted friend or counselor is really key,
mm-hmm.
which is many times I just want to try to solve it just me and Jesus because that feels safer. But I have found, especially in terms of really healing wounds and getting freedom from shame, I think saying it out loud to someone else is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can do it without that aspect. So
mm-hmm. saying it out loud gives voice to something that feels hidden
mm-hmm.
and is not intended to be hidden in the shadows of our heart.
Thank you so much, Lori. We could keep talking for hours.
We could. And I mean, the reality is, like, my heart is very tender toward people in ministry. Missionaries, pastors, pastors' wives, whomever it may be, that they carry and they walk in some really hard places while helping others navigate really hard places. And so they're tending to other people's souls, but often they don't have others who are tending to them. That's why Mike and I are doing what we're doing, whether it's online with people, we've been overseas meeting with people, or people have actually been out to our place where we do, 3-4 day intensives with people. So there's different avenues, but our heart, my heart, you know, to anyone listening right now, is very tender when you're in that place of ministry and missions and on the frontline gospel worker kind of role and still carrying really hard things.
Well, we appreciate and receive that tenderness. And my family has benefited greatly from it. You guys have helped us through a time of transition, and you've helped even my kids. So thank you so much. And may the Lord continue to keep your heart tender and use you to help care for people like us on the field and in full-time ministry through the Great Invitation. We appreciate you guys a lot.
Oh, thank you.